The church calendar year began this year on Sunday, December 3rd, with the first Sunday of Advent. It continued with the celebration of Christmas on December 25th. It picked up steam with the start of Lent on February 14th, and it reached a high point on April 1 with Easter. And then, just when you thought it was safe to catch your breath, boom, Pentecost rolled around on May 20th. Friends, that is a lot of action in a short amount of time. When do we get to catch our breath, you might even be wondering. Well, I'm glad you ask. For we are early in the process of living into the answer to that very question. For the Monday morning after Pentecost, May 21 this year, we began a six-month season in the church calendar year that is totally devoid of any major Christian holidays. In fact, we're forced to wait all the way until December 2nd, to reach the next holiday, the beginning of Advent, when that same cycle starts all over again. This season we are now in is so long, so drawn out, that early church leaders were hard-pressed to find a catchy name to describe this six-month period. So you know what they decided to call it? Ordinary time. That's right, ordinary time. So what on earth are we supposed to do with this ordinary time? Twiddle our thumbs, waiting for December 2nd to roll around? Not quite. For you see, ordinary time gives us a luxury of pausing, taking a deep breath, and then beginning to think about what sort of vision of the world that our faith has ushered in. Why does it take so long to live into an understanding of that vision? Because the vision of the world, or the reign of God, looks so very different from the vision we might expect. That's why it takes so long to grasp it. Case in point, this morning's collection of two parables from the Gospel of Mark that give us a glimpse a bit deeper into that reign. So on this Father's Day, as we begin this season called Ordinary Time, listen closely as Jesus begins to tell us about the world that we have been called to live into. Mark chapter 4, verses 26 through 34 is read from the Common English Bible. Then Jesus said, "This is what God's kingdom is like. It's as though someone scatters seeds in the ground, then sleeps and wakes night and day. The seed sprouts and grows, but the farmer doesn't know how. The earth produces crops all by itself, first the stalk, then the head, then the full head of grain. Whenever the crop is ready, the farmer goes out to cut the grain, because it's harvest time." Jesus continued, "What's a good image for God's kingdom? What parable can I use to explain it? Consider a mustard seed. When scattered in the ground, it is the smallest of all the seeds in the earth. But when it's planted, it grows and becomes the largest of all vegetable plants. It produces such large branches that the birds in the sky are able to nest in its shade." With many such parables, Jesus continued to give them the word, as much as they were able to hear. He spoke to them only in parables, then explained everything to his disciples when he was alone with them. Thus ends the reading. So, have you got what this reign of God thing is all about? Well, let's see if I can help with that. In speaking to this very point of what the reign of God is about, Matt Skinner, professor of New Testament at Luther Seminary, says that this morning's passage tells us at least two things about what that reign of God looks like. The first thing he tells us is that the reign of God will take root, whether in the world, in society, or in someone's heart, and that it will grow gradually and automatically. It will grow perhaps so subtly, he writes, that you won't even notice until at last it produces its intended fruit. Now that sounds good in the surface, but the implications are a bit more challenging than we would perhaps like to admit. For you see, if you were anything like me, I'd like to think that the seed grows a bit differently. Instead of focusing on the seed and its natural ability to grow on its own, I'd much rather focus on the farmer, the one who rolls up her or his sleeves, gets to work, and creates the ideal situation for that seed to grow. For I love to cast myself in the role of that farmer and pat myself on the back and take credit for the grain's growth. So right out of the gates, Jesus makes a clear and compelling and especially challenging point. And the point is that the inbreaking of the reign of God is not about us farmers. It's about the capabilities of the seed or the gospel message itself. And that leads to the second point Jesus makes about the reign of God in our passage. And it's a point that's easily lost on us, its modern audience. For you see, when Jesus talks about a mustard seed starting small and ending big, we spiritualize the message and think to ourselves, okay, God's reign starts small and ends big. Got it. And we leave it there. But that is not how Jesus' original audience would have heard his message. No, that's because Jesus' original audience knew at least two things about mustard seeds that you and I don't. They knew that they were prolific, and they knew that they were a common and sturdy weed that popped up in places that you'd never imagine, in places you didn't even want them. So what did that suggest then to Jesus' original audience about the reign of God? Two things, Matt Skinner says. One, it told him that the reign of God, like those big prolific weeds, will upend society's ways of enforcing stability and regulating everyone to their proper places. And two, it will get into everything, whether you want it to or not. Wow. Friends, it's no wonder that we need a whole 6 months of ordinary time to realize what we've gotten ourselves into. Okay, Pastor Craig, I get that the image of a seed, a mustard seed, is challenging, that God's reign has a force of its own that can pull us out of our comfort zones. But what does that look like in a modern sense? Help me understand what that looks and feels like today. And to do that, I want to tell you a little story that starts way over across the pond in England and finishes right here on the campus of WHCC. So let me begin. Back in the year 1907, an Englishman by the name of Robert Baden-Powell, a lieutenant in the British Army, founded something called the Scouting Movement in England. The program was designed to be, and I quote, a program of informal education with an emphasis on practical outdoor activities. 2 years later, in 1909, a Chicago publisher by the name of W.D. Boyce was out on the streets of London on a foggy day. He became lost in the fog, and as he was stumbling about, he encountered a nameless boy who intervened and guided Boyce to his destination. When Boyce tried to give the boy money to thank him for his assistance, the boy refused the money, saying that he was a Boy Scout and that he was merely doing his daily good turn. Boyce was so intrigued with the program, which inspired such noteworthy behavior out of a young man, that he met with scout leaders while in London. Then he brought their ideas home, and on February 8, 1910, he incorporated something called Boy Scouts of America. The stated purpose of Boy Scouts was, and I quote again, to teach patriotism, courage, self-reliance, and kindred values. What kindred values? Well, as the Scout Law says, a Scout is trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent. Values that anyone can live by and benefit from, right? Not quite. For as the Scouts became established in this country, they made it clear that only boys, and not any boys, but only boys who were drawn to the opposite gender, were welcome in their program. So here, friends, is where the reign of God took seed, especially in regard, seed in a way that's comparable or found in this morning's parable. You see, for several years, progressive faith communities who chartered local Boy Scout troops were torn. How could they, in good conscience, bring a group onto their campus that targeted LGBTQ persons for exclusion? In trying to answer the question, many churches stepped into the role of farmer and tried to manage their crop for themselves by severing the relationship with the local scout troop, kicking them off their campuses. But all the while, the seed of God's reign was taking root and growing. Until, in the year 2000, after 90 years of living with restrictive membership requirements, a lawsuit called the Boy Scouts of America versus Dale was filed, challenging the exclusion of LGBTQ people. The lawsuit got the attention of the leaders. So in 2012, they established a commission to investigate their exclusive policies. On May 23, 2013, the National Council of Boy Scouts voted to admit gay and bisexual youth. And 2 years later, they removed the restrictions from their leaders as well. And on January 30, 2017, they even began to admit transgender youth. The seeds of God's inclusive reign had grown into fruition, right? Advocates for inclusion had won. Our work was over, right? Not quite. For the seed that had taken root and grown wasn't just any old seed, mind you. It was a mustard seed. And while many were satisfied that the Scouts had agreed to take in gay, bisexual, and transgendered men and boys, that prolific, gigantic mustard seed of justice had other things in mind. It longed to crowd out even the exclusive gender policies that to this day had kept girls from participating in the program. And on October 11th, 2017, friends, the mustard seed came into fruition when National Scout leaders announced that as of January 2018, girls would now be welcome in the scouting movement. And that very month, the scouting program that had been on this church's campus since 1947 created a brand new family pack. And that pack included one of the first girls to enroll in the Boy Scout movement in all of Los Angeles, Evie Wilkins. In speaking of the implications of this morning's parable upon the ministries for local churches, Matt Skinner closed his commentary with these words. He said, "Whatever you preach and however your church conducts its ministry, if it doesn't provide sanctuary, hospitality, sustenance, and renewal to those who need it, like little birds in the field full of foxes, then it isn't the gospel. For there is no gospel in which Jesus remains buried in the ground like a dormant seed." This Sunday, friends, let me say this in closing. This Sunday, we celebrate not just the fact that it's Father's Day. We celebrate the way that faithful followers from all social locations, especially those in the scouting movement, have gotten out of the way of the seed and let God's loving, inclusive reign take hold. So today, fathers across this nation can celebrate a world in which not only their sons, be they gay, bisexual, or transgendered, but even their daughters as well, can participate in those programs that open new worlds and new possibilities to them. Possibilities that we farmers would have never even imagined. Who knows what new doors will be opened in the new year, in the new 525,600 minutes before us. But may we glory in the possibilities this Father's Day and always. Amen.